It's a good line, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. We're at the pod tent.
What is this? That's the Bonnaroo Pod Cave, right?
Oh, it's the Pod Cave?
Yes.
It's the Bonnaroo Pod Cave.
We've established that.
It's the pod trailer. What are we calling it?
The Pod Cave.
The Pod Cave?
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're here at Bonnaroo, and stay tuned, folks. It's a good life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. We do that kind of stuff at the beginning, right? Man.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to It's a Good Life, babe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans from Bonnaroo. Day two. We had three great episodes yesterday. Please check them out. Pass them on to your friends. We had some great guests. We're going to continue doing it all weekend. And we're very pleased to have two distinguished folks from the Magic Hat Brewery with us. We've got Sean Rice and we have Andrew McGinnis here. Thank you for coming on, guys.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Super happy to be here.
Cool. And so, one of the things we love about Bonnaroo is that camping experience where you just meet people. So y'all's camp is about three down from ours.
Yeah.
And so we just met each other. I love that about Bonnaroo.
Yeah. Those connections we make back there are just so awesome, and it makes Bonnaroo like just one of like the coolest, friendliest gatherings like I've ever been a part of. So
I agree. Awesome. It is amazing. Like, we've been meeting nonprofits, like political advocacy groups, folks like y'all. And y'all, you know, we gave you a taco.
Yeah,
you gave us some beer. Jeff's got the taco party rolling,
dinner,
everybody.
So that kind of saved me.
Jeff's just been rolling out the tacos, man. You've got the kitchen on lockdown, bro.
Yeah, I did eggs. Just saying. I did eggs this morning. Yeah.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just grilling as much as I possibly can. You guys can come by anytime,
awesome,
man. You know, for sure. We'll trade you food. You give us beer. You know,
exactly.
We're okay with it. Yeah.
So tell us, what do you guys do? What's your role at the brewery?
So I'm the art director and a designer. So I work on the main packaging, brands. We just finished these cans that you guys are drinking right here, our new kind of higher layout we've done for all of our packaging. And there's the new Circus Boy. We've just updated the design. And
it's really gorgeous.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah,
yeah, we'll put some pictures up online on the website.
Yeah, for a little while, Circus Boy was kind of in a transitional period, and we just kind of brought back a character and with the circus tents and everything, had a really cool feel to it, and kind of Bonnaroo-ish also with this Ferris wheel in there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally. That's right. I see that.
On this guy right there.
Yeah.
And well, this guy too.
Oh, also, it looks like the comedy tent.
Yeah, right, exactly. There.
Well, and also, this looks like the trees in the guest, in the artist hospitality area. You know how they've cut out the trees?
That's yeah. Oh, yeah. Thing. Yeah. It looks a little bit.
It's
like
very Bonnaroo-y.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that was number nine. That was one of our, not the first, but one of the first.
Third, third
yeah.
Beer ever.
Yeah, yeah, it started as like a summer seasonal, and then took off, and that was like the icon. And you know, that's what we're mostly well known for.
Sure.
I started at Magic Hat in 2005. I'm from New York City, and I met the sales rep down there, and we became friends. I was working for a distributor down there, and I loved the design as an artist, like, and into beer. At that time, Magic Hat had the coolest, like, you know, colorful labels, not like any other beer. Like,
sure.
And everything attracted to me to them. Their mother case box was just black with these like stars, and it was
that
beautiful.
Makes a lot of
it was
sense.
Art. It was pop art. It looked like Andy Warhol.
I mean, what I'm looking at now, which is the Not Quite Pale Ale. If I do mushrooms later, I'm gonna stare at this can for 4 hours. I'm gonna lose my mind.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've got Andrew over here.
Yeah. So I've been working with Magic Hat for about 2.5 years now. I worked in the tasting room there for about 2 years, and then recently I kind of switched over into the marketing department. I'm an intern there, so I just lucked out.
Wow.
I'm just like the luckiest person.
You're like Spencer over here.
Yeah, and they just sent me down here, and they're treating me great, and I can't complain. I'm getting paid to be here, so it's beautiful.
Have you guys?
Well, I guess you're not exactly like me then.
I want to Google this craft beer independent movie, Spencer. I'm wondering if you guys have seen it, because it kind of like just speaks to what you just said in your role.
Yeah.
It's got Jason Sudeikis and Olivia, not Munn, but the other Olivia.
No, that's from
the Olivia from
Newton John.
No,
I don't know.
Like Olivia from that HBO movie when she did the frontal.
Olivia Wilde.
What?
Did Olivia Wilde? That
yes, Olivia Wilde.
Wife.
Yeah. Can you look at Drinking Buddies? Have you guys seen Drinking Buddies?
No.
Oh, I haven't, but I saw the trailer for that.
Great fucking movie.
Is it a good movie?
I'll have to check it out.
It's a comedy, it's an independent film, and it's set in a brewery.
Okay. Oh, she's right? In house.
So she's the marketing person.
Girl in house, right?
She's the marketing person in house.
Yeah.
Jason Sudeikis owns it. And then the dude from The New Girl, which I hate that I know that. Just embarrassing.
I actually don't think that's Jason Sudeikis. I think that's the guy from Office Space, actually.
No, it is Jason Sudeikis. No. He's in it, but Jason Sudeikis has a small role.
Ah,
so okay. Jake Johnson from New Girl, and it's also Anna Kendrick. So it's got all, or Kendrick, whatever her name is. So it's got all these stars in it. It was like a, I don't know, $1 million movie.
Where are you going with this, Joel?
It's set in a brewery, and it's really cool. It's set in a brewery. Like they have all these crazy scenes where they're just cleaning the tanks.
Uh-huh.
You know? And then they have like all these like little events or whatever. It's just, it's great. And they're drinking beer the whole
working in
time.
The tasting room.
It's called Drinking Buddies. Yeah. They drink the whole fucking time. Yeah.
In the winter, it gets pretty slow sometimes working in the Artifactory. That's where we give out free samples. And yeah, there's been a lot of occasions where I'm like, this could be a show, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So when you
work for beer, it's definitely a fun environment, even though it's a serious thing where people are working and there's deadlines and stuff, but
and
there's a lightness about it, and that you're still, there is beer, and at the end, you know,
you
get to drink at the end of the day. Exactly, we do.
Well, in this movie, everyone would drink beer at lunch.
Well, we don't do that.
We can't do that.
I think I would be very productive and would have a very terrible looking labels probably. or
hey, look,
just never get them.
We like to think that we're productive in New Orleans and we do that.
Okay.
New Orleans is a whole other.
Andrew, you were saying
yeah, what did you say
New
about New Orleans?
Oh, well, no, you guys were talking. I went down there a couple months ago and was there for a week and it just kicked my ass. Like, I have no idea. I would die if I lived in that city. Like you guys,
and you were
commenting that this is going to be a nice relaxing week.
When Andrew told me that, I was like, "Monterey is going to be chill."
Yeah. Exactly.
It's going to be a nice getaway from the madness.
Yes, it's like rehab.
So, just a question I have is that it seems like Vermont is one of those places in the world that has a kind of a connection, a link to New Orleans. I'm not sure why. But it just kind of does. Like I owned a bar. I sold it 2 weeks ago. Okay, but we had Magic Hat number 9 on tap.
Yep.
The whole time, right? Uh-huh. 7 years we had Magic Hat number 9 because we're like, it's a great beer. People from Vermont up in that area seem to have this kind of link to New Orleans. And before the podcast started, you guys were talking about that you have the coldest Mardi Gras. Uh-huh.
Yep. This year, Amanda registered it into the Guinness Book of World Records for coldest.
Oh, we got to get that done.
I thought I was going to die. I was on the float. We have a float down Main Street in Burlington, and throwing out beads and moon pies to all the people. And we had the guys from Super Troopers were announcing the parade route.
Uh-huh.
That movie's set in Vermont, too.
Yeah. I was on the float.
I always thought that was Canada, but that's Vermont.
Yeah, I think so.
Love
pretty close
that
to Canada.
I don't think it was shot in Vermont.
We're driving to Canada.
They're supposed to be like the
to get poutine.
Yes.
But,
that's right.
I really thought I would just have to have my fingers removed because they were frozen solid.
Wow.
How cold was it?
Was it 4 degrees? Or
four?
With the wind, it was like negative
15. 4 degree Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there was still a good amount of people on the street. Kids, adult, like all ages, and we had Fishbone playing out. White Jacket playing. We had a great Fishbone played an amazing set, and the cold. It started snowing. It was unbelievable. They were incredible.
I just want to say this. Listeners. I want to say one thing off the bat.
Please.
One thing, Fishbone, the band that I've seen more than any other band, and of any band ever in my life. I've probably seen Fishbone 40 times.
Wow.
Right?
That's awesome.
I fucking love that band.
Were you at that Tipitina
At some point,
show?
We're going to get Fishbone on the show.
Were you at that show at Tipitina's where they told the police to fuck off and then the police, like, pulled
busted
them over
their
on the way out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I was there.
Yeah.
If they played in New Orleans, I was there.
I was there as well. We didn't even know each other.
That's right.
And that connection between, Well, I guess Vermont, Burlington, and New Orleans is like the music and like the party
town.
And
they're
beer
both music towns.
And like a lot of people who I mean Vermont is a very mixed place with half of the people who've been there and then a lot of transplants. People move to Vermont like myself from New York City. I you know after certain events in New York City, I needed to get out of there and I was done. So and we went there and I was like, I felt
wait, good. I like certain events.
I don't even talk about that anymore. I've moved on. And it's beautiful, it's incredible, and people are great. I mean, there's a really accessible music scene. Like, I'm an amateur musician myself, and I've played at almost all the places. And like, I couldn't say that about many other cities. And
musicians. Minutes before we got on the podcast just now, Spencer, you might be wanting to talk about this right now. I'm not sure, but these guys have a little band set up backstage in the camping area, about two doors down from us. And look, man, I don't know about amateur, but you were rocking the mini cord. You were on the mini cord, and you were killing it on guitar, man.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask, like, what's the music scene in Vermont? How's that doing?
It's actually really strong. Right now, we have another renaissance. Like, you know, there was Phish in the 80s. Sure. They were huge.
Yeah.
And then, basically, it's kind of trailed off from them with different jam
bands. That
jam
band scene is still
It's still there. It's still strong. Well, but we have...
There's also other...
There's a lot of great bands. To name drop some, like Cat Wright.
Yep. Medela. I mean, Grace Potter came out of there. But Those also, like, Turkawaz, who played last night, and Twiddle, they play at Nectar's, where Phish had started out. It's like a small bar.
Yeah.
I don't know, 100 people can fit in there.
Do you guys know the connection between Phish and Vermont and this festival?
There's lots of...
Because there's an intricate connection.
Yeah, Russ Bennett.
Russ Bennett, Chris Crowell.
Yeah.
All the folks that did those. Yeah. Back in the day, like, when Phish would do these... Well, two things. Superfly Presents, one of the two promoters here at Bonnaroo, was based out of New Orleans. And they got their big jump when Phish came to the Jazz Fest, right? And no promoter had done nighttime shows during Jazz Fest in New Orleans, right? And because Phish was coming down, they were smart enough to book all these shows, like the Roots and P-Funk and all these nighttime shows, right? And that's really what elevated Superfly Presents to get to a point where they could even like pitch this festival, right? And so, sorry, we're having a little audio glitch here, folks. I'm a little distracted, but
just keep going, man. You got it.
I got it. I'm gonna pull it through. So Phish was kind of inextricably tied to Superfly Presents' success in order to elevate them to a level to be able to even pitch this festival, right? And they pitched it to the Dave Matthews people. Which is Red Light, and they were the initial investor. And then Phish was the headliner, I want to say, in the very first Bonnaroo, or second.
Really?
Yeah.
It was Widespread and Phish.
Yeah.
And
what year was that?
And then from a
2003?
And then
what was the first year?
2002 or 3.
Yeah. Well, it's 16 years.
And then
so,
from
so.
A, yeah, do
it's
the
2001.
Math. Spencer knows I don't know how to do math.
It's 2001.
So 1927. And then from a production standpoint, I will just give you guys some insider information about the festival. I don't think they care. Superfly Presents had this idea. They were calling it the Access Music Festival before they changed the name to Bonnaroo. And they were pitching it, and the Dave Matthews people came on board. The people who were running the Artist Hospitality Bar, they're the original Dave Matthews like bar staff.
Oh, wow.
Right? So there's still that connection. Ike and all those guys, shout out to them. And what they serve is drinks. It's great. I just got a Red Bull and vodka for lunch. So
sweet.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so Superfly had been pitching this thing. They got the funding about 4 months before the very first festival. So they had this site, right? But they had to build it out. And they didn't. There was four dudes from New Orleans who promotes shows at Tipitina's and the Contemporary Arts Center and Sanger and the Orpheum Theater. These are all like venues that are like 1,000 to 5,000 people, right? So they reached out to all the production people, including Russ Bennett, who had been doing the big Phish hangar shows. Phish had been doing these shows at old Air Force bases.
Yeah, I went to the first two.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, to Clifford Ball and the Great Went. Those are my, I was a senior in high school when I flew for Clifford Ball. Yeah, that was my introduction to music festivals, and that's basically kind of what led me to here and what led me to Magic Hat, and it's a really awesome connection.
So just to put a button on it, Superfly reached out to those guys and said, they were like, we need the most experienced large festival people in the country to come just build out the infrastructure. And all those same folks, the electrical people of Vermont, the, I mean, 90% of the production.
Catering.
90% of the production vendors. Is Vermont.
So Russ did all the like design work of our brewery. Like,
Are you serious?
He designed our tasting room.
Are you serious?
We have this big tower sculpture in the front of our brewery, which I think no, it's not on here. But he designed that. He also does a lot of other, you know, cool stuff for a couple other breweries and other great stuff in Vermont. He's
Gandalf.
He's one of my favorite people ever.
Yeah.
Period.
Definitely.
He likes a hot rod rental.
Too. Oh, yeah?
He does.
I got to tell you, man. A couple times I've seen Russ Bennett roll around. You know, you're like, he's got the long hair, right? He's got the beard, right? But he's also got the Stang.
The convertible
Stang.
Convertible hot rod.
Just calling it.
What you got down the street?
It's like Alan Newman, the founder of Magic Hat, and who is friends with Russ, also drives a badass Porsche. pretty awesome. They like theirs. Pretty sweet cars.
So what are you guys doing here at Bonnaroo? You're at the Brewers Festival?
Yeah, so we're also a major sponsor this year. We've been kind of through the years, various levels of sponsorship. And
From the very beginning.
And from sponsoring some music, from a tent to much smaller, just being part of the Brewfest, to now this year we're part of the Brewfest. Our beer is available at a bunch of the tents, the porn stations. But we're not doing much activation except for in the guest camping. We brought some instruments to try to get people. There's so many musicians here, especially in the Nashville area in Tennessee. So we just started playing, set up a little stage setup, and people have been coming around and jumping on, playing with us or taking over, and that's been pretty awesome. So that's kind of our thing. This is kind of a test. So what we want to do is maybe next year or the year after that, make an experience where we'll have a stage, and you can come in. It'll be air conditioned. It'll be look like our Artifact Factory. It'll be funky, Magic Hat-y, and there'll be a couple of musicians who can help you if you sing. You want to sing a song?
Yes.
If you want to play guitar, and you want to need a bass player and a drummer, or vice versa, we can have a couple of multi instrumentalists available.
That'd
we'll
be
have
awesome.
Maybe like all the stuff you'd need to rock out and play Bonnaroo. Your own thing.
You get to play up on it.
You get to play up on it at Magic Hat stage, and we'll post it to your social media.
This is our idea and our test.
Hopefully no other brewery steal our idea. If not, you're welcome.
Listeners of the podcast know that Jeff DeVille is the guitarist for Egg Jubilee, who just celebrated their 20th year anniversary in New Orleans.
We'll have to come over and use our stage.
Is this a little test for the stage that's going on back there in the camping area right now?
Prototype. The idea.
It's a little prototype. Let me ask you guys a question. Okay, so Magic Hat, where are you guys on the spectrum? You're a national brand.
Pretty much. We're available in
42 states now.
Obviously, we're much
mostly East Coast,
and when we are on the West Coast, it's definitely a city here, city there, very regional. But
you can rack up 42 states on the East Coast pretty quickly. But let me ask you a question. So you're in New Orleans. You're at least that far west.
Yeah,
which is great. So where are you on the spectrum of craft brewing companies and that are growing? I mean, it seems like you're growing.
Bridgeport Brewing to a Sierra Nevada. Yeah. Where are you guys?
Right. Yeah.
So we're at the I would say right underneath Sierra Nevada, but we're different.
Dogfish Head.
We different.
Dogfish Head.
Like kind of maybe a little less volume than them.
We make a lot of beer and. So we're not a microbrewery, but we're craft beer, and we're, I guess, regional, but I think we're still classified as a regional.
Well, I think there's a couple ways of looking at craft beer in the definition of craft. So as far as the style of beer that we come out with, we are definitely a craft beer. We're always experimenting with new recipes.
Absolutely.
But I'm, there's a lot of dispute. I think there's a lawsuit that was going on with Blue Moon because somebody, they were calling themselves a craft beer and they're suing them, basically. Because I don't know what happened as far as what the precedent is going to be set after that of what a craft brewery is. But I think the National Brewers Association has something... Where you have to be privately owned in order to be considered a craft brewery, in which case we're not. But I'd say the style of beer is just as good as any craft brewery.
I mean, if it's an artisan beer, it's craft.
We're definitely not trying to make the strongest, hardest to drink, most flavorful. We were definitely trying to make something that's accessible. It still tastes good. We'll give you touches on styles, but we also, you know, we don't go too style. We not necessarily put a twist, but we make it our way. We have different ranges of beers. We have our year-round beer, which is definitely more accessible, but we also have special barrel-aged series. We have our Vermont-only series, which are definitely way bigger, you know, and that could, you know, go up to any of the other really great craft breweries. We're not trying to say we are the best or make the best. We love beer. We love everybody's beer.
If the industry is doing good, this is what I've always heard, because I used to sell sponsorships in the craft beer space for music festivals.
Yeah.
And what I always heard from my clients was that if we're all doing good, that's good for all of us. Everyone needs to be doing good.
Yeah.
Let's just kick the shit out of Budweiser.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A lot of people like to, you know, create drama, like they're like, or like, You're from Magic, you must not drink anybody else. Of course not. We're beer people. We love beer. We love to experiment. Everything is different flavors, different...
Do you guys go to that crazy big trade show in Denver every year?
I haven't gone yet, but we do send people out there every year.
I haven't been.
We have a pretty big, crazy setup there, and I've heard it's an amazing brewfest.
I've heard it's insane. We got to go there and podcast from there. Yeah. What's it called?
A Great American Beer Fest?
Yeah, right. I had a client, Cascade Lakes Brewery, out of Bend, Oregon, where they were a client of mine, as well as Deschutes Brewery was a client as well. You guys are probably heard of Deschutes. And they just always told me it was just a complete shit show. Like, it just was a complete fucking blacked out 3 days.
That's a kind of standard.
But did you remember that just now? Because Triumph the Unsolved Comic Dog did a bit from that festival?
No.
Have you ever seen that bit?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's great. One year when we were here, Triumph hosted the comedy tent. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. That was the best, man.
It was the best.
I love him.
Have we told the story yet on the air? I don't think we have.
About Elmo?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joel.
I'll start it, but you gotta finish it.
Okay. Start what up. Go.
So Triumph's hosting, Elmo comes out, and basically Triumph ass rapes Elmo.
There's no other way of describing it.
There's no other way. Is that karma? Didn't that dude from Elmo, wasn't he kind of like...
But the funny thing about it was like, it was funny as she's like, yes! Oh, Elmo, you're so good! Yes! And he's just humping him, right?
Well, and the orgasm lasted like 8 minutes.
The orgasm lasted so long, I got super uncomfortable. So everyone was like laughing, and then everyone was like starting to groan.
Yeah, like
he's just like,
just keep doing it to where it's not funny, and then it's funny again.
It's funny again. Exactly.
Yeah. His election coverage was like some of the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Oh shit!
Oh my god! Come on!
I just could not. I watched it over and over.
His election coverage and the stuff where he went to that university. Did you see that one?
I don't know.
What was that?
Was the University of New Hampshire?
You went to the University.
Oh yeah.
Did you see that?
And he made the effeminate, overweight African American man come in and then ask the college kids to describe the person, and they couldn't say any of the words. They couldn't say gay or black or overweight.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it was great. You guys got to see that. Let's see. So, describe a little bit what goes into conceptualizing the designs that you put, because Magic Hat, as much as it's known for the beer, is also known for the designs on the cans and on the packaging and other things that they do. Certainly, people know it for that. The labels are great. We talked a little bit about Russ and his contributions, but Tell us about your artistic and creative process in terms of designing these things.
Now it's kind of like a natural. It just comes out. Like, I don't even have to think about it. I go to my computer, and it just happens. And
really?
From the beginning, you know, I'll go back to that number 9 when I first saw that. A friend of mine who was in boarding school brought down this box of beer, and that was one of the first craft beers I had. And so that psychedelic kind of pop art really spoke to me, and pop art is definitely one of my favorite kinds of visual art. Period.
I've noticed, like, even with the taps, like at the bars and everything, you'll have the same like swirl design on there. Who sets up those designs?
I design. Well, there's 3 Magic Hat designers right now, and I design a lot of tap handles, and we all work together. But that the spiral and the Magic Hat logo, that was, you know, around. I forgot the exact people who did it. It was JDK Design Company. It was the original people who did the original stuff. I kind of just go off that, basically.
No, it's great marketing, because like one of the ways like I pick up beer when I'm at a bar is, you know, like I've seen the tap. That stands out. It's like, what's that one right there?
And ours was, it was just like, let's make it art. Let's make a sculpture.
Yeah.
At the same time, there's a bit of controversy because those tap handles are super expensive to make.
Is that right?
And we don't get them back. When we drop off a tap handle, it's a $60
tap.
You never
get them back.
You know, we're making this art. We hope people see it. But then there's like, all right, we spend all this money. Do people appreciate it? Do people see it all the time? So we go back and forth from making this, you know, artistic sculpture to something that's standard and kind of flip-flops.
I can speak to that.
Yeah.
Okay, as a bar owner,
uh-huh.
I was like, you're never getting this tap handle back, man.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Do the distributor.
Yeah.
Right. So, they're always like, hey, we're going to come and pick up that tap handle. Nope.
Yeah.
And it's not happening.
Yeah, and then the end of the year, we'll look at it and be like, oh my God, we spent how much on tap handles? But like, that's what people see.
That's,
you know?
That's what they see.
No, it seems to work for sales. Like, you got me through.
It works every 3 years. But then 3 years go, and then, well, we have to change it because we spent too much on it. Oh, and then people see, like, well, they're sick of it, seeing something that's the same. Like, let's make it good, like, sculptural again.
A lot of them have, like, a little spring on it, too. So, like, when you pop the tap, you close the tap, there's a little spring on the top that'll just kind of, like, move around and catch your eye.
It boils around, like a bobble.
It's like a bobblehead.
Yeah, we try to, like, make movement.
That's nice.
I try to design, like, the craziest, most expensive, impossible thing. And then we have this guy, Paul from this company called Renline in Vermont, who will take our crazy idea, make it realistic, and simplify it, and make it beautiful, and it's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Back from the design, though.
Go ahead, please.
So just a lot, listen to music all the time. When I have my headphones on, that's the main inspiration. I think of the name, what kind of songs do I, what do I feel Circus Boys kind of, RPM, what's the tone, what's the style, and I'll listen to that. Sometimes I'll listen to a song like 100 times over and over again, and that kind of will make something happen, which is really cool.
That's great. That, absolutely. I mean, using music as inspiration, it's really kind of obvious as well, and you can see also in the name and the design that it's kind of in the zeitgeist of the times. But another thing, as a bar owner, that I was always kind of like complaining about was design of cans and bottles. And so, for instance, I'm gonna dog out of the week. All right, we have this thing that we do called dog out of the week.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit negative, but you know, we don't care, right?
The echo.
Go ahead, man.
The echo.
What about the echo? What
the
about
dog
the echo?
Out of the week.
What echo?
The
what
sound effect.
Echo. Echo. Dog.
Dog out of the week. We dog out of the week.
Do it again.
God damn it, man. Dog out of the week.
Okay,
so that's our dog out of the week echo, ladies and gentlemen.
Folks, we do this because we're going to have sponsors.
I'm a little punchy still from last night.
Exactly. We're going to have sponsors, and we want you to know that the sponsors we have, we get behind. Until we have sponsors, we're going to dog out people we don't like, so that you know that we're not afraid to dog out people, and that would might give us money. Because we're not going to take their money.
Get on their product.
Okay. A beat of beer, you know it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Right. A respected, but also maybe not respected brand, right?
Uh-huh.
Look, we don't...
It's not good beer, folks.
We don't laud a beat of, man. We just don't laud them. We don't, even though they're from Louisiana. We're like, come on.
It's the same. I know, that's the kind of the same thing that we have. Because I think Abita is, they are a kindred brewery level of
yes,
of
right,
sorts.
Right, right.
The beer's not good, though.
I haven't had it in years. I remember like Turbo Dog from way back, and
Turbo Dog's their best beer.
I like that.
Turbo
Dog is Purple Haze.
Look, to their credit,
back in the 2002 was last time.
They Amber is one of the worst.
I had an excellent Abita beer that I didn't realize that I was having. It was one of their like bomber size beers. I don't even remember which one, but I was shocked.
The local beer that was, you know, hot once and now is old and now
not there you go. Yeah. Exactly. That's what it is. But I'm dogging out because of the design.
Yeah.
Okay. And here's the thing, and I want to commend you. All right. This is the reason why. Because this right here, if I take this can of Circus Boy right here and I put it on that shelf and I turn out the lights at night and all I have is dim light and in a bar. Right? Uh-huh. And I'm trying to identify brands because the bar puts the cans up to show what beers they have. I can identify that.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because it's high contrast.
Yeah.
Right? And so many of these new beers have these like kind of crummy designs that don't have high contrast because they're not thinking about what people are doing when they're drinking beer. So I want to commend you guys because you see the black with the white, you know, and the yellow with the black with the white outline.
The font.
That all makes
a
huge... It's fantastic.
Well, yellow and black, you know, I mean, and the font.
The contrast, but also it's just... Yeah. I don't have to put on my reading.
So it's super important to make the font and everything legible in every kind of lighting scenario that you can think of. Yeah. And for me, as a seller of beer for a while, you know, I would just always be like, look at this label. And the reps would be like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, look at your label. No one can read this for crying out loud.
Well, one thing that I love about the Circus Boy is that typically, and this is like an exception to the rule for me, is that I typically do not like multiple font types. And you guys, the multiple font types here work.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time making sure that it works together.
That's an exception to the rule
right there. Yeah, you can't mix certain, there's some things you can't mix, and there's some things you can. You know, serifs, non-serifs, different shapes.
No, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. Yeah. It just pops right out at you. You look at it at a glance, and you get everything. It's great.
But I'm looking for some pat on the back here about this, all right? Because what I want to know is this. Is it intentional because you want people to be able to see it from a distance? The high contrast
in
the design.
Oh, definitely.
Well, touchdown.
There's basic design. But you can
Justice ran it in from the 1 yard line.
That's a choice. We want, you know, there's spike also, football. You know, if you want to hide something or if you're looking to be, you know, not showy, or you're trying to be cool and you're not want to do what it's done. There's a style and there's a group of people who want minimal. They want kind of hidden. They want like something
Mama
like
Papa.
That.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's space for everything. And
That's no good.
No,
it's not bad. I'm just going to say it's no good. I don't care how you couch it.
Yeah. Okay.
The thing is, when you're in, and I'm glad you agree because that works. These are great designs. Yeah. You've done a great job.
Yeah, we have a team like in our Lisa Kelly and Ryan Ober who are
wonderful
people that, you know, make sure I'll do what is right because I'll go all over the place. I have a tendency to over design and make 100 options, and then I have to kind of keep on cutting it down. And they're, you know, they can be the ruthless ones. Like, nope, let's just get rid of that because I I can't like let it go. But even though I know like, oh, this is all garbage. It was really, those are there just to make you see this one.
Right.
So,
folks, we're gonna share some images with you of this, but I can tell you like, so on the bottom of the can, there's this band. That's on the bottom of the can, and that's a uniform thing, I say, right? Probably on these size cans.
Our year-round.
For the year-round one. So there's a band on the bottom. So every time you see a Magic Hat can, you see that on the bottom, and it's in this high contrast black lettering.
Tells you right away.
Surrounded by yellow, and on the number 9 one, it's an orange, a kind of burnt orange, I guess.
Coppery orange
with black lettering as well. Which you can easily identify, which is super important when you're in a dim bar after you've had 5 beers.
So what's
crack this one right now.
What's also cool about Circus Boys, we just released a split 6.
Yeah.
So Circus Boy is a year-round beer that we've had for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's a American style Hefeweizen,
brewed with lemongrass.
With lemongrass, it's got a little bit of citrus overtones in it. It's very light and easy to drink, especially on a day like today.
Yeah, summertime.
You can crush them all day. But we just released Zirkus Boy. So basically, it's the same beer as Zirkus Boy, but we use a German style Hefeweizen yeast strain in it.
Nice.
We have it in the brewer's tent right now too. Zirkus for sampling.
We'll come by.
It's definitely. It's weird because it's the same exact beer with just a different yeast, which the yeast makes so much flavor that people, you know, a lot of people obviously know, but there's a ton of people who have no idea that that does that, that you get banana and clove and all these crazy bubblegum flavors from it. So yeah, we have this six pack now, or this split series where there'll be three of the German style and three of the American style. And it's been really cool for people to taste a yeast. You know, yeah. What's the difference between like the flavors of that?
Sure.
And, we're moving that on to next with number nine. We're going to do a nine and then high nine, which is a higher, highly hopped version of number nine. So it's not quite an IPA.
Oh, I see.
Your boy Spencer did some Nazi jokes last night, didn't he? No. Did I make that up? I thought I heard some Nazi jokes recently.
I don't know. I don't remember any.
It was
Nazi
KKK jokes, but I thought there might have been some Nazi jokes in there.
No. It was KKK. Spencer, do you want to explain what Joel's talking about?
This kind of came out of left field, Joel, but I'll be more than happy to explain. So we went and saw Kyle Kinane last night, and
he needs to go see that big KK sign out.
Yeah, there's a big KK sign. It's like a pawn shop.
It's like
KK.
It's like,
come on, guys. Like.
It's like a giant K and a slightly smaller K. And we're like, come on, are you kidding me? Like, you didn't have to do that. You did that on purpose.
Like if your address is 66 on 6th Avenue. Right?
Killer KK pawn shop.
But yeah, he was making jokes about the KKK, talking about how it's very ironic that the Grand Dragon is like the top of all, you know, KKK members, when dragons are kind of a East Asian thing.
Kyle Kinane show. That was good.
And then Spencer,
the very first thing we did.
Spencer went and stalked him. He got accused of stalking later.
Yeah, apparently they thought I was trying to stalk Kyle Kinane, and they were just like, trying to talk to him, you know, get him to come on the podcast. I don't know how you can get accused of stalking when you have a media pass. It seems a little hyperbolic to me.
Well, when you have a Hawaiian shirt that has like waffle burgers on it.
Oh, that's you're killing me, Smalls guy, right?
This is the Sandlot. This is classic cinema.
That's a great shirt.
Killing me, Smalls.
That's a great shirt.
Love it. Apparently there's a pineapple thing. I got this pineapple shirt.
Yeah,
the pineapple party.
Pineapple.
I didn't even know there was a pineapple
thing.
I have a pair of pineapple pants. That shirt would go great with. Pineapple is the best fruit. If there's a fruit that says I like to party, it's the pineapple.
Where are you guys on pineapple on pizza? This has been kind of like a thing lately.
I love Hawaiian pizza.
You like that?
And as a New Yorker like who loves pizza, I mean, I do like that Hawaiian pizza. It's delicious. Yeah. Not all the time, but here and there.
It's
that sweetness with the tomato. It's like that.
It depends on what type of pizza it's on.
Well, yeah, you need good New York style pizza.
But look, also like a little known thing that a lot of crawfish boilers don't do.
Connecticut makes fine pizza as well.
Connecticut.
I live up to New York.
There's Pete's Connecticut pizza.
I also live in New York.
Is it called Pete's?
In New Haven.
It's a New Haven.
Yeah,
New Haven Pete's or whatever. They make a great clam pizza. Holy shit, it's delicious.
Really?
Yeah, they got them in D.C.
Norwalk has some great pizza.
We're all over the place.
Yeah, Norwalk's got some great pizza.
Can I say something to Shaggy, who's doing the crawfish boil? Good on you, Shaggy, for doing the crawfish boil at Bonnery. That's great. Crawfish is kind of out of season now, whatever. Since. But what's really nice that people don't do is when the boil's over, you pull everything out, your sausage, your potatoes, and you cut the flame off, and the crawfish, you pull it, the onion and the lemon and the garlic, you pull everything out, and then you just drop some pineapple into that water, not boil it, and you drop it in for about 2 minutes, and it soaks up that spicy flavor, so you get this sweet and spicy pineapple.
It's kind of ridiculous, man.
It is amazing. Wow.
If you guys made it over, did you make it over to the crawfish bowl?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was my fifth one. It was awesome.
Nice.
It's crazy. It's
cool.
A lot of crawfish.
You know what they had this morning? I went to take a shower. And I'm coming back from the shower. And what are the clean vibes people are digging the smashed corpses of crawfish out of the dirt.
Shout out to Clean Vibes, everybody.
In order to clean up the area.
That's awesome.
That's
I'm great. Like, just shout out to the Clean Vibes people.
That's what this festival's great about. And look, the promoters of this festival.
That's a dirty job, man.
The promoters of this festival went to so many other festivals, and one of the ones that I went to was at the that they also went to. I think this was 2006. I went to the Fuji Rock Festival, about an hour north of Tokyo in Japan.
Wow.
And these guys, Superfly, were definitely influenced by these guys. The composting that those guys were doing in 2006 was out of control. Yeah. And it's very clear that that Superfly adopted that mentality of dealing with tonnage of waste and how they deal with it, right? And so shout out to those guys for being responsible with the recyclable, the compostables, and getting the crawfish out the turn.
And look, if you're back there in the guest VIP camping area and you pass by the Magic Hat people and you get one of these great cans of beer, make sure you drop it into the recycle bin.
Yes.
All right? Because they have that for cans, which is great.
Yep.
Guys, I'm looking at our time right now, and I'm thinking that we're pushing about 40. We're at 41 minutes now.
I mean, we want to finish up. We just what are you guys looking forward to in terms of
music?
Or comedy or whatever.
Comedy, I never get to go to comedy because you have to wait online forever, and we have to go back in the brew tent over and over. So like, I still have never gone to a comedy show, and it really pisses me off.
The lines are weird. I don't know why the lines are so long.
Yeah, that's
check it out. We'll check it out.
I wish there was like another way to do it, but you know, or if there was like some if there's limited seating, it's smaller, but you have to be quiet in there.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
It makes sense. But for music, Future Islands is a huge favorite band of mine, and I love U2. I've loved U2 since I was in elementary school.
Nice.
Since Joshua, Joshua Tree was my first album from them. That love them since.
And
it's
you were just
a bunch of times.
Well, yeah. One of the guys I work with at the hotel in New Orleans, he just saw them in Houston, and he told me, I don't know if they're going to do the same thing for the festival. Clearly, that's different than their tour, but. They did Joshua Tree front to back, and then they just kind of went off their greatest hits, you know, Sunday Bloody Sunday, New Year's Day, everything like that.
I can't wait. Yeah. I've seen the Zoo TV tour, the Octoon Baby, Pop Mart, and Elevation. So I haven't seen them since then. But,
you're excited.
I'm really excited. Yeah.
Have you ever seen? Are you a fan?
I haven't seen them. No.
Where are you going to watch from?
Probably maybe the bleachers, or if I can. I'm dying to meet Debano or The Edge, so I'm gonna really try to sneak in, but they'll probably think I'm a stalker.
Who's your
thing this weekend.
Who's your contact from the sponsorship team? Is it Robin or Chad or Alex or whoever your contact is? Here's what I would say: they have this really amazing experience, and I'll just explain it to everybody, and you guys should try to do it because it is the best way to see. The best way to see music from the main stage. And they do an escort thing where they meet everybody back here, and they bring sponsors back, which you guys are one.
Uh-huh.
They bring press people in. They bring people like me and Jeff and Spencer because we're friends of theirs. And they escort you to the soundboard. And the soundboard is the best place to see music because that's where they're mixing the sound.
Yeah.
That's where it sounds the best.
Yeah.
And they have portalettes and free booze.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's... I've seen my...
There's an area...
It's just amazing.
To the
it's
left,
like a city block size.
To the left and the right of front of house.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
There's a cordoned off area, and that's what Joel is talking
so
about.
So
barricaded
out,
off.
Find out awesome. Who your sponsorship contact is and say, hey, Joel and Jeff said that about this experience, and if you guys would walk back there.
Yeah.
Because they gather everyone together. And walk every one of us.
It's certainly worth a shot.
Yeah. What's been your guys' favorite Bonnaroo performance? Your favorite all-time Bonnaroo performance?
Yeah? Stevie Wonder. It was number one. Number two.
Neil Young for me, number two.
Oh, really? The Neil Young one, right? Where people
with
were complaining about the super jammy stuff going on.
No, that was at Outside Lands.
You're right. Right. No, Neil Young was great. For me, I would say number two was easily...
Oh, Metallica.
Was Metallica with Chris
Rock opening.
Oh my god.
Chris Rock on
the sickest. I mean, Stevie Wonder, the show that he played here, Stevie Wonder can be a very, not from his amazingness and skill standpoint, but his shows, if you've seen him several times, probably seen Stevie Wonder five times now, It runs the gamut because he does whatever he wants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at this show, he just threw down with everything that was great. It was nonstop. And it was amazing. Everyone was enjoying it at a level that
grown people were crying.
I can't remember that kind of spirit going through a crowd, maybe at any show that I've ever seen. But then there was this other one where we were just amazed, where they just teamed up Chris Rock coming out in front of 80,000 people and debuting all new material, opening for Metallica.
He did a whole new hour just for Bonnaroo.
Oh wow.
That's awesome.
And he
acknowledged the fact of where he was at and who he was opening for.
Yeah.
You know, he just, that all the jokes were just Bonnaroo jokes.
Oh, that's
yeah, he's awesome. Like, what kind of festival invites a black man to open for a hippie audience?
For a metal
band. That's great.
So those were the big ones, I think, for sure.
I saw Stevie Wonder at Montreal Jazz Fest for free the day after Michael Jackson died.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was ridiculous.
Did Michael Jackson?
He would play his songs, like he played two of his songs, and then he would stop, just walk on a stage, he had a little boombox there, and just would play Michael Jackson,
oh,
and
wow.
Just danced.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He just, did. And then everybody insane. Was just, we were just, he was just like, all right, it's a part, Michael Jackson party, let's all
yeah,
just
that's
dance.
Right, right.
That's insane.
And then he'd go play two more of his songs awesome. And then come back out. And he was
he did that at Jazz Fest in New Orleans. He did it for Prince.
Stevie Wonder awesome. Famously recorded his album, the one that's got, shoot, can you pull up Stevie Wonder albums for me, man? It's the one with Higher Ground on it.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry. Let's. Yeah. What was the other? The other one that was amazing was that over at the other tent. The other tent.
We had Public Enemy.
Let's bring Dave in here. Yeah, we can introduce these guys to Dave Clement.
Thank you.
Come on in, Dave.
Come on in, Dave.
All right. Listen, they had Public Enemy.
Come on in, bro.
And Femi Kuti.
Oh,
so he's playing side by side. So Femi Kuti, Public Enemy
is here. Femi Kuti's here.
Yeah.
And we're just like, it's like if you could split your body in two and go, you know, to the, I mean.
That's awesome.
And we went back and forth, you know. We're like, we watched a little bit of Public Enemy, and then we're like, dude, we got to go see some Femi Kuti. So we went over there and we saw it for a little bit, and then we went back. And then Chuck D was done, and Flavor Flav did his thing, and we're like, okay, now it sucks. And then we went back.
Chuck D was basically like, Flavor Flav, you get to go nuts now, I'm out.
And just left.
But, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Clements in the house.
Look, and I wanted to say, hey, Dave.
Hello, everybody. I'm back.
So, guys, really quickly, I just wanted Stevie Wonder recorded famously, and you might know this sound recorder, that there's the primary studio producer in New Orleans. Can you just go to the Wikipedia for that?
Who are you talking about?
I'm trying to pull it up right now. But the album was Intervisions. Mm. It was recorded in New Orleans by like the top New Orleans record producer, who is not any one of those guys. It might have just been his studio. So anyway,
it was at Sea Saint Studios.
Okay,
I'm sure.
You are.
Yeah, at so Allen Two Cents.
But the story. Look, this was back when Stevie was. I'm talking out of turn, but Stevie was a partier at the time, and they had some prostitutes in there, right?
And the other the guy you're thinking of is Marshall Seahorn. I might be incorrect about that, right, Dave? Does that
sound very?
Yeah, that sounds from. You're gonna put your money on that.
So Stevie famously put a microphone in the vagina of one of the prostitutes, and then he played percussion on her belly, and that made it onto one of the tracks.
That's coolest a true story I've ever heard.
That's what we did on our first album.
Guys, I gotta introduce you to Dave Clements, friend of the podcast right here. Dave Clements is the owner of the actual Snake and Jake's bar in New Orleans.
Actually,
exactly.
Awesome.
Which
they wouldn't let me into yesterday.
They wouldn't let you in there?
No, it was too crowded, and I tried to, but I'm the owner of the original one in New Orleans, and a guy kind of like,
shit.
Waiting in line for about an hour.
So we're gonna get you in there.
Does the original one look like that, or is it like just
no?
Is there any?
That would like be like comparing like a 90-year-old Sophia Loren to a 20-year-old Sophia Loren.
This Naked Jake in New Orleans has a tarp on the roof, you know what I'm saying?
It actually still has a tarp from Hurricane Katrina. Oh, I got up there recently, and it's an old billboard that blew off of an interstate highway sign. Big vinyl, and it's a Jack Daniel's Christmas. It is. Giant, like 60 by 40 foot vinyl. Advertising, and that's our roof.
So it's a little different.
It's a little bit different.
They have some Christmas string lights up in there, a little Santa Claus.
Other than that, it's not much. A lot of air gets in. It's very open.
but to give you some context, guys, you know, the Superfly Presents people started their business at Snake and Jake's Bar.
And the store, they went, their first office space was the storage unit for the bar next door.
Our office. I like to call it an office.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of surprise.
The executive suite.
Well, look, I think we're about ready to wrap it up.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap it up.
This was a great time, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Shout outs to Magic Hat. Where can we find you on? What's your website? What's your Twitter?
MagicHat.net and Magic Hat Brewing or Magic Hat Brew Co. I think it's Magic Hat Brewing or at Magic Hat Brewing on Instagram and Twitter as well.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So Sean Rice, Andrew McGinnis, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us. This was great.
Thanks for being a sponsor at Bonnaroo, the festival we all love. And thank you for bringing us some beer.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we're going to have
great work, you guys.
We're going to have a little bit of food later on over by the tent.
Some steaks.
You come by, marinating some steaks.
The steaks are marinated right now.
Yeah, Dave, you guys, everybody come by, all right? We're going to have a little throwdown tonight. Before the U2 show, okay?
Yes. All right.
Good.
Look, so it's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. Thanks for tuning in to our episode 39 from Bonnaroo. We got two more coming today. We got Doug Mason coming on. We've got, I can't remember who our guest is at 5. We've got the One People. It's a political advocacy group that's trying to take down Donald Trump. So we got them coming on at 5. So it's all good stuff,
which
is what Bonnaroo means.
That's all
good stuff.
Yep. All right, folks. We'll catch you on the next one. Take care.
Appreciate you.